a win.
Wait, hold on.
Epic meal time.
Mm-hmm. I could totally see them doing this. Like,
I ate a whole two.
Go ahead. You got to turn two because I'm going to lose.
Wait.
Ah!
What?
I am God's gift. It's so
I
perfect.
Two,
I don't know. Look, it's half. You got a little more.
I think he won.
Yeah, you did.
No,
you got
no,
more
this
icing.
Is, this is a tie.
You got more icing, though.
No,
but
this
I
is
got
a tie. You're it's supposed to be all or nothing.
It's about as close to a tie as possible.
This is not supposed to. You know why? Because this
still
is like.
I want to take a picture?
For like the week.
Mm, still good, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because it's been like sealed. Sorry.
We're like way too excited about the Oreos.
Dude.
So, wait, I have a question. In these clinics that you work, like, so there are women that are coming in and they're like, I'm like an ovulating machine, right? And they gotta, like, or whatever, and they gotta, like, get them, and it's very quick.
What's the question?
That wasn't the question. like, you gotta get them right away, right?
How much time do you have when they come in? Like,
so you reboot their ovulatory cycle so that you can time when it happens. And then it's like usually like the morning of, you have like a day or two. They come in the morning, you do your retrieval within like a 1 or 2 days.
How invasive is it? The retrieval sounds pretty invasive, right? They were talking about you got an aspirator or something.
Right, so you go like, you put the needle up through the vagina.
Oh, it's painful.
Like,
I don't know, all the time.
Sorry. Needle in my...
Yeah.
Okay, I know, I'm like asleep, but yeah.
Yeah.
Do they, wait, are you fully sedated? They put you all?
No, the one woman said she didn't, she was like counting how many, wasn't there that one woman who was like, how many did you get?
They'll give you, like here, in this article, it's like,
is it like suck
the
toilet?
Yeah,
you suck them out, right? They said aspirate?
Yeah, but it's like, you have to get in there. And they use like an ultrasound to see how it is.
This is just some crazy business.
Right?
It's big, man. I know.
That's because it's like not.
I mean,
I know.
The money these people
see, which is why maybe just like. I vacillate between like regulating everything to the hilt and then totally deregulating and letting market forces. But just like, no rules.
Well, but
pioneer.
Most of them totally opt out of any method you have to regulate. They don't take insurance. It's cash on the barrel. Unless you're violating a state law.
That's like horrible because there could be some like.
But I mean, it's almost easier to regulate because it's like you're bypassing the entire insurance thing. It's more like an actual economy. It's more like a market. Like there are less.
What was the country that covers your first cycle?
Well, it's actually easier if they participate in insurance. It's easier.
I guess
if you do what we say, Emmanuel can pay.
It doesn't act like a normal market, so it's harder to regulate in the sense of like what policies work and what don't.
But there's almost nothing in practice.
Yeah, I know, that's my point.
I just know it's like insurance.
Do you know certain qualifications you have to have, like what sort of proof of
insurance?
I don't know. I think you do have to see
seen
by like your regular doctor and then refer to specialists and then you fail.
That's it.
I believe, but I'm not sure.
But it's a lot to think about. I'm sorry, like, seriously, would you do that for altruistic reasons? I'm getting, like, shots in my butt every however many hours. Like, no way! Give me the money! I just thought, like, that doesn't...
I agree with you.
I am all about, like, yeah.
I don't know.
So, when I first read the Yale article, I started thinking, I was like, no, I've always been against egg donation.
Wouldn't $30,000 be great?
Maybe. I was like, maybe like helping a family. And then like a couple days went by and then I went and read the next one and it was like the average was like $1,000 to $2,200. I was like, oh, absolutely not. And I think that, you know, like no way would I do it.
No. I think 5 to 10 it sounds about.
That sounds about right.
Well, like not overly coercive or, you know.
I want double digits, but other than that.
Well, and you're worth
it. I get double digits, I want double digits. You're not worth it because you're worth it.
You get a lot. You'd
have a friend of mine who did it got, I think, $8.
That's not enough.
$8,000?
Uh huh.
$8? Wow.
$8,000. $8,000.
Sorry.
But then, like, man, that goes quickly, too.
Well, that's what they're saying. It's like, will it really change? Well, so the big argument in, like, these, when you go to a foreign country, is it going to change their life in the long run? So you go and you give them this huge amount of money, which seems like a lot, but in the long run, they're still stuck in their, like, low poverty life, and is it really changing?
Although it may change a lot, like that one woman who said she bought her house and then she was going to put it towards her kids' education. So it will change that child's life, maybe, but it won't.
She seemed to have her things together.
For the majority of...
Oh, but she was a surrogate, right?
Mm-hmm. She was being a surrogate. She was carrying.
Right.
What was that?
Whole other level in my mind. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
No, I seriously had a whole tube of wine this morning. I would be surrogate before I would ever eat when I was back.
Having a baby night? And I gotta get all...
Yeah, I feel like if I'm going to be pregnant, it's going to be for me.
I'm not pregnant.
I don't want to make a child out
there. That's the opposite feeling.
I don't care if my biological child is dead, do not make me pregnant.
Is this what you do as before?
Do not make me pregnant.
See? Don't make me pregnant. I've never been pregnant.
Is there some kind of...
$500 for donation.
You mean for embryo, frozen embryo?
No, for sperm donations. On the second floor.
Really?
Yes. The ass in the subway. That's how
there's
I know.
There's a lot around.
This place is weird.
I think I have the picture.
It's like a strange mix
amalgamation
of doctor's offices and like...
My dentist is on the basement.
Your dentist is
it's a side entrance,
yeah.
But yeah, my dentist is...
I've had to go through there.
Well, I wanted to just emphasize again or point out, I mentioned before, in Canada, it is not legal to pay women for egg donation. They can pay for expenses, like reimbursement for travel expenses and that type of thing. But there is a view that this isn't strictly enforced, and there is kind of an underground market in eggs in Canada, and there's concern then that there's not strict oversight of egg donation. So you could argue that, you know, allowing payment also enables the government to, that we don't have strict oversight here either, at least it's above board so that there's not something going on that we're not aware of. The issue is that how much oversight should we impose in terms of payment requirements, informed consent requirements, should it be voluntary guidelines, which is what it is now? Should we have some government regulation? I just sent out two articles on the issue of payment, and this guy, Aaron Levine, had done a study of just looking at ads at several student newspapers, and almost half of the ads offered above $5,000, which is you're not supposed to do under ASRM requirements unless there's a good reason. Now, I think sometimes there really are regional differences in amounts because of the cost of living, too. A quarter of the ads offered over $10,000. The highest was $50,000. The lowest was $3,000. So there's a wide variation in what people are getting paid. So you could argue that, yes, we should allow it, but we should have more strict requirements on payments. I think you could argue it's not fair to women to require, not we wouldn't require them to do this, but to go through something like this unless they get paid something. Now, of course, they're choosing to do it, so if they know they're not getting paid anything, how is that unfair, really? You know, if they've chosen to do it for less pay. But in Canada, there is a shortage of eggs. And in Britain, they not only limit payment, but they limit the amount you can pay for expenses. So, you know, we kind of take our free market approach for granted, but it is not necessarily the way that other countries go.
Jane. Is there anywhere that limits like the number of times you can donate? Like
Well, the practice guidelines say no more than six.
Okay.
This is for two reasons. Number one, it's not good for your body to keep on donating eggs. And number two, they don't want a lot of people running around who are related to each other and don't know it.
Interesting.
So both, you know, sperm donation and egg donation, there are certain guidelines as to how many times somebody should be able to do it.
For sperm especially, if someone goes to a bunch of different places to donate, could they...
There's no way you could know. Yeah.
Hasn't that happened? Wasn't there something where they found out some guy?
There was an Easter.
Yeah, something.
A couple was like married or about to get married. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what happened?
It was like It wasn't around here, but there's a news article. A couple was about to get married and found out they were related. And then it was their insemination or something.
Oh, I thought I had heard though about someone running around and had like, however many children out there, like 25 children.
Oh, I think
know all that.
Because with sperm, that would be so easy to know. There was some Discovery Channel program
like many years ago about the all these kids in California who were half related. It was like 50 or 11 or something because their sperm donor was. And I guess like it came.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. He decided to like track.
They had like a reunion, and they all tracked down this one donor in like Seattle or something.
Yeah, it was on the west.
Yeah. I just ambushed him like, hello. Yeah.
See, that's the thing. He was interested in oversight, to know what had become of them
because he felt like he was. Had superior genes and wanted to know what
happened.
He was a Darwinist.
Yeah.
Damn. Evolution of the fittest, you know, survival of the fittest.
He won.
What were you going to say, Amy?
No, I just said if you think that way, it's smart.
No, but I mean in terms of regulation.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, makes it really seem like you need regulation and not just, you know, recommended guidelines or something, and no way to even enforce those guidelines.
Well, even if if you had them, you still couldn't really enforce it because unless you had a donor registry, which some places are doing, where they have a registry of who's donated, and then you could cross-check it. If everybody participated, then it would be effective.
I mean, isn't that a kind of similar issue in like clinical trial research, where people just go from trial to trial and people don't know who's in what, so they're starting to register? I mean.
Right, they're professional guinea pigs who, you know, make a living doing phase one clinical trials.
And you're not supposed to be in two at a time, but sometimes
people do. Yeah, and you're supposed to wait a certain number of months between trials. You're supposed to not take certain, you know, not take different types of meds. And I mean, there are a lot of confounding factors involved when people are serially involved in phase one trials. So yes, there's a movement towards trying to get a registry for participants in these trials so that you can check, make sure somebody's not participating in two trials at once and make sure they're meeting other requirements. There are some voluntary, like donor sibling registries now, where people can track down their donors and also any possible siblings, half siblings they may have out there. Because in some ways this is like adoption because you have another genetic parent out there, and some people want to find out, number one, who their siblings might be and who that person is. Because you want to know your genetic, their genetic history or their medical history, which could indicate certain issues with genetic diseases or diseases that are genetically linked. So, you know, how open should this be? Should we have more of a federal policy concerning disclosure of donors? Should it be state by state? Should there be no requirement? Right now, we don't have a policy that is in place that would give resulting children the right to know who their genetic parent is.
This is just a legal question, but would it be possible to have a federal policy, or would you just have to have like a uniform act that each state decides to?
I think you could. I mean, there'd probably be constitutional arguments against it, that it didn't impact interstate commerce, so they wouldn't have jurisdiction under the Commerce Clause to enact that kind of law. But I think they could. Is it likely? Probably not, because family law tends to be a state matter. And medical practice, regulation of medical practice tends to be a state matter. Now, they do have Model Act now. The ABA has put out a Model Act for assisted reproduction technology. These things take a long time to filter through on the state level, through the state legislators. And it would try to make more uniform some of these parental determinations and other practices that may vary by state. You can just get that Model Act online, I think, if you want to look at it. But right now, we don't have uniform policy. Between the states, and many states have nothing in place at all. Any other questions or concerns about domestic egg donation or surrogacy? Really talked as much about surrogacy. What are some of the differences and ethical issues that might arise with the practice of surrogacy between egg donation and surrogacy? What about the exploitation argument? Might that be more of a concern with surrogacy, and why or why not?
The burden physically is greater, probably.
So generally, those people who are interested in being surrogates are not for low income. They wouldn't be those that were particularly desired because of concerns about nutrition, but they, those that are being surrogates tend to be middle class.
And egg donation as well. Because they're screened. I think there's a big difference in the burdens issue, and it's not just physical burden, but you're doing a lot of what some call emotional, there's the emotional work of surrogacy that's very real. You're gestating a baby for 9 months. You are working against personifying that child in your mind. You're working against becoming attached to that child, so that you can then part with it at birth. If there is emotional work involved, that donation is not quite on par with that.
And I think it's more than the emotional work that you think, okay, I need to not do this. Your hormones are driving you to it. So you're also working against your hormones, right, which are kind of asking you to bond and asking you to care about what is being gestated. And
right.
Hormones are hard to work against.
And then you're parting with that child after birth, which is not easy no matter how well prepared you are. So the toll involved is certainly different. Physical risks are higher, and the psychological burdens are greater. But should there be any difference in theory between, you know, if it's a fully informed process, paying someone to gestate a child versus paying them for to donate eggs?
How much do surrogates on it? Is there data on how much they get on it?
I get upwards of
$100,000.
Well, now up to the, I mean, you know, it's high.
Yeah.
For instance, we're going to be talking about reproductive tourism in India, which is much cheaper. They get like $30,000. I mean, it costs the couple about $30,000. The donor, the surrogate, just gets
it's like $70,000 or something.
So it's much cheaper to do it in India, for instance, than here. Now again, in theory, you're not paying the surrogate for a baby. That would be illegal.
You're paying for the gestation.
I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek because I think in some ways it's kind of hard to separate out, you know. But, you know, someone is carrying a child for 9 months, they're incurring medical expenses, they're incurring other expenses. It's a hardship on them, and many of them have their own families. So there are reasons why, of course, it would be, you know, expensive, even if you could separate out that from actual paying for a baby. But then we have the issue of foreign surrogacy arrangements, especially now India has been a country where many people are going to from the United States because of the expense here, from other countries because they can't do surrogacy. The UK doesn't allow it. Some other countries don't allow it, so they go to India, which has made it legal. And it's become a business, a big business. These women commonly are housed, like they have a dorm. I mean, they don't go into their world again pregnant and operate in their world. They stay in this dorm, they're separated from their husbands, they're not allowed to have sex. They can, their kids, sometimes their younger kids can stay there, but many times their older kids can't. And they give over the child once it's born. So what are some of the concerns with, why would we be more concerned with this practice than we would with surrogacy in the United States?
It's basically imprisonment.
But they volunteered to do it.
Wealthy foreigners getting like much more bang for their buck, giving it to people in poor countries who are financially disadvantaged.
Yeah, it's the same coercion worry, just kind of magnified.
And why is it magnified?
Because there's a disparity.
Yeah, right. The wealth.
And not just a disparity, but the fact that, yes, I mean, it's not that we're so much richer, but they're so much poorer. Mm-hmm. A lot of these women make more doing surrogacy than they would several years of work. The inducement is very, very high to do this. There are some questions as to how voluntary this is sometimes in terms of their relationship with their husbands and whether they're being coerced to do it by others in their family. But, you know, if it's cheaper, is it ethically wrong for a couple to try to take advantage of this?
I feel like it feels like yes, just because the disparity is so much greater and the potential for, I don't know, for, like, so I feel like there's just, like, such a greater potential for this to be, like a pimping situation or, like, you know, there's, like, no way, I feel like, we talk about, like, could we regulate it in the United States and, like, you know, nobody will ever go for that, but the fact is, like, it is possible, whereas I feel like it's not possible to have any sort of control over it in India, and that it just makes it feel a lot dirtier.
If, just kind of a hypothetical, if you could be assured that it was, you know, the woman making the choice on her own, even though, you know, the money is still a big issue, would it still seem unethical?
So like the example in the paper where it seems like the woman kind of like has herself together and is doing it, the widow, mm-hmm. you know, to pay for her son's education, yes, that feels better.
I mean, you're making
the potential for abuse is real, but
I mean, the counter argument is they're getting so much more money than they would otherwise. You're helping them. You're giving them an opportunity to make a lot of money. I'm playing devil's advocate right. here. I'm not saying necessarily agree with that, but Bill.
Enough mission, you know, a certain amount of money to them is a lot more than it is to us, too.
Right. So it's a win-win. It's cheaper for the couples who want to do this, and it's a real good for the women who participate. Jane? So
I have a question about whether or not the compensation compares proportionally to the compensation in the States.
Okay. No, and I think the clinic gets about 2/3 of the compensation, though don't quote me on that, but woman doesn't get the majority of it.
So is it proportionally higher in in these developing countries or in India or wherever they're doing it, or is it, we're talking about...
Well, the money goes a long way there.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, like this woman said, you can pay yourself through school, somebody could pay up their house.
Now, does it proportionally match the... the amount that they would be spending on treatment and, all the sort of like, if the idea is that you're supposed to be paying for the inconvenience and not necessarily for the baby or the egg or whatever, does that match up or is it different, like, comparatively between
the
two?
Well, I think you would have the same kind of issues.
Okay.
They probably are paying more than the expenses, yeah. That's for sure.
Okay.
Yes.
It seems almost as if the people from the U.S. who are going overseas have to be willfully ignorant of what's happening. I mean, you just have to suspend your total sensitivity to informed consent issues and coercion issues and all that. Just put the blinders on. I want this baby so bad I'm not looking.
Well, I imagine that's why moms are going there. I'm pretty sure they are probably really desperate in the first place.
But, I don't know, I always think, like, what's the alternative? Maybe this person would then be compelled to do some kind of really risky manual labor, for example, where it's like, if you want to think about physical risk, like, I think there are a lot of kinds of labor that could be very risky and probably would not pay anywhere near as well. And...
To be a case-by-case issue.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about the same thing for organ donation. Like, if we're worried about paying people to take on risk to their body, and I feel like we do that all the time. Like, pay someone to be a coal miner, like, that. I think that's a lot more definite risk. Like, you're a coal miner for 40 years, you probably are going to have
So we pay people to undertake risk all the time. Look at the people in Japan who are working on the nuclear reactors. I doubt if they're getting paid big bonuses, but people do risky things for money all the time.
Like, and can you tell someone but this is too different. Risky, you can't do that? Or this is, I mean, if you think about paying people to take on risk, then it would be smarter to take on risk for more money, like, right?
If that's the only, yeah, I mean, can we only isolate out payment for risk as the issue? I mean,
no,
you're paying
I think there
for
are.
Risk, and you're right, there are many situations where we do pay people to take risks. We don't always pay them what they should be paid. Coal miners, for example, because they don't have the leverage to get it. Or they've never known anything else, so they don't. It's not as if these people come from some other place in the country and say, I'm going to get paid a lot to risk my health. But you're right, just paying somebody for something that's risky in itself isn't necessarily a wrong. Well, what are the parameters that might make it a wrong? Do they have other choices? Is the payment fair?
Right.
Are we exploiting them because they can't, because otherwise they'd be getting nothing?
I mean,
or are we doing them a favor by giving them an opportunity?
Right, I think those are all very legitimate concerns, but why I always think about the alternative, like, all those things would apply for any other kind of work, kind of, and it, you know,
so how would pregnancy
only taking a coal mining
be
job because that's like all they can get. Like, I if we're going to be really concerned about that, I think we'd be also concerned about it in all these other situations, even though they are legitimate concerns.
And many people are concerned about it in all other situations, yeah. You know. But, I mean, I think you point out an issue here, which is there something different about reproductive work that, you know, these concerns are heightened in some way? Or not? Are we just being overly sensitive because it is reproduction? Without having a good justification for it. I'm not, you know, that's a high, you know, I don't have an answer here because I think there are good arguments on both sides of these issues. There's a need. There are people who need the money. I think one of the biggest issues in foreign surrogacy is informed consent, how the women are treated, whether they're fully empowered to give their consent and to volunteer for something like this, whether they've been coerced by others to do it.
Whether they're getting the money.
Right, whether they're getting the money, how much money are they getting? The clinics are getting a lot of money. They're doing very, very well. You know, here, egg donors tend to be middle class as well. They tend to be white, middle class, young women. But surrogacy is in such a demand because it's only gestational. So they're able to use Indian women who they wouldn't necessarily choose as an egg donor to gestate their child.
Are the issues different than the fact that a lot of pharmaceutical research has moved overseas? And
I think they're very similar. Bracketing out the issue of whether reproduction is something that's different, whether we should be doing this at all. I mean, the Catholic Church, for instance, argues that we shouldn't be doing any of this, even if it's IVF using the gametes of both parents. We shouldn't be doing that. That's introducing something else into procreation, which should just be sexual intercourse procreation, and definitely shouldn't be introducing third parties into it. Now, some people make these arguments without religious justification, but I think it's harder to do. That we're playing God, we're interfering with the natural order. But if you get past that, then you need to figure out why you might be opposed or not opposed to these issues. Is this just like any other commodity? Is reproductive work different from other kinds of work? Is there more of a risk of exploitation? What would exploitation look like? All these issues, kind of talking now. But they're important issues that I think we tend to just take these things for granted. Well, yes, it's happening, and that's the way it is, without kind of ethically dissecting the practices and maybe looking at ways we could improve them. And I also think the drive to have children, I mean, the article that we looked at, Pursuing a Baby to the Ends of the Earth, what were your impressions of how these people were feeling? I mean, there's also an issue of, you know, exploiting couples. Some of these, in these foreign situations, sometimes they paid a lot of money to get down there. Sometimes it can be a bait and switch operation, where they paid all the money, they're down there, and all of a sudden, well, this donor's not available, this one is, or, well, we need to do this. You know, it's, there aren't a lot of protections for the consumers of this technology either when you go out of the country. Which this article kind of highlights. But what were your feelings about how they, their sense of wanting a child? I mean, what, was it rational? Was it?
It was a lot of money. Holy. I just couldn't believe it.
They paid what, $70,000?
Yeah. They had already
previously paid that.
I mean, that's right.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised that they went overseas considering they spend all that much money.
Right.
Like, that clearly just shows that they want this and they will go, like, they're already spending a fortune on it. So, like, taking a huge risk going overseas, and it seemed like they were in moderately well informed, at least. I mean, they also seem super desperate, which was surprising, but I don't know. I mean,
but then they went to lengths to sort of check out some of this stuff, and then at the very last minute, it was like, oh, there's another egg donor because this one's not working out, and then that's still like, I thought, you know, like for the people wanting the Yale eggs, like for all the effort.
They just wanted an egg.
They just wanted an egg, yeah. Like, for all the effort, if it actually came down to it, and you thought the Yale woman, and then you were in the clinic, and there was another woman, and she went to, like, I don't know, somewhere you didn't think was...
I don't know if the Yale couple would have taken...
No. No, probably not. Probably
depends
not.
On how far along they were, how desperate they'd gotten.
Excuse me?
Because it depends on how far along they were in a process how desperate they'd gotten.
Right.
So, like, maybe this couple was initially that Yale couple, and they're...
Yeah.
Finally, and now they're just like...
Later, years later...
We'll take anything.
Like, she probably can't hold on to an egg because she's uptight. But. Sorry.
I said, like, this article, I kind of vacillated between wanting to take this couple and say, get over it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, life can deal with some hard knocks and you've got some. And you just need to get past it. Versus saying to that, you know, understanding that we all choose things that are important to us and we're entitled to have those important things. I don't know where I come down to that.
If we can afford them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like, are you entitled to everything?
Yeah, but if you have the money and your wish is to have the pink pony, can't you spend all your money developing a pink pony? I
mean, they didn't. Like, but $70,000.
That's a lot. It's not.
That was just their idea.
Right, but if you have it, that's one thing. This couple had to, like, refinance, and they got all that credit card debt. Like that, I mean, you know, he said, were they acting rationally? That's not rational. But, like you said, it's...
Well, it's probably not an unfair question, because I'm not sure these...
Well, right.
The desire to have a child is a rational desire. Once you've had one, kind of like,
well,
okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember the article, of course, it wasn't that long, but did they look into adoption? Or that was not.
I think that's what they ended up.
They were doing both at the same time.
Which also seemed weird.
No,
which is very common, actually. People want a child so much that they might not be willing to go through all the physical stuff unless they know they're going to have a baby at the end of it, whether it's through the IVF or through the adoption. You know, but that's very expensive too.
Adoption.
Just going through an adoption process, buying a home study, going through all the agency fees, all that stuff.
And there are much less babies available for adoption these days.
Right. Yeah. Well, they got pretty lucky. They had a baby fall in their laps. Right? Or am I thinking of a different
article?
There's that article that we read, like the very first article in the New York Times about the woman with twiblings, and like she had wanted to adopt, said that like, it was really hard because they didn't qualify. And so I just, I thought, well, gosh, you kind of have to have like an in that, you know, that... the uncle or whatever was an obstetrician who, and yeah, it helps to know someone.
Usually it's very difficult. I mean, I think most people don't realize that you can do private, that number one, you don't have to go through some big state agency or even private agency to adopt. You can find an attorney who knows obstetricians who locates babies. And that's not illegal. I mean, if somebody's looking for a parent for their child, but most people, I think, are not aware of that, and also then you're not as, it's harder to get a baby in that process, depending on the attorney, depending on how many people they know, depending on how they get the babies,
Get the babies.
Well, the birth parents, I should say, how they locate birth parents.
I got really scared at the end that after all that, it was like, you know, they talked about the young girl, like, crying and, like, I don't want to give, not yet, to go through all that.
Adoption is very difficult.
Yeah, just has to be.
Even after, I mean, I've known couples who've adopted and they are scared forever.
They've had, like, 2 years or something.
Someday somebody's going to raise their, yeah. I mean, legally, but it's not ever.
God.
Maybe the father wasn't informed. Maybe, you know, it's... I mean, ultimately, you are legally protected, but it's a very difficult process.
Are you as legally protected if the adoption is with a foreign country through an adoption agency in a foreign country?
Yeah, I mean, because the adoption's done over... I mean, the adoption meets the requirements of American adoption law, so... I mean, they may have different requirements for that in terms of when parental rights are severed. Here, for instance, you know, you have a certain period of time to change your mind. Over the, you know, in different countries, that they may have different requirements.
I'm just remembering there was a Central American country that all of a sudden wanted to pull back. I can't remember.
Guatemala. Well, they were having a lot of issues in terms of the population thinking that babies were being kidnapped for adoption. Right. Not that it was true necessarily, but...
After the earthquake.
Yeah. So... But all of these, you know, arrangements introduce a third party into what has historically been a private matter. So next week we'll focus, not next week, in fact not even 2 weeks from now, we'll focus on the issue of how this affects our view of the family and our view of children. We've touched on these to an extent already. You know, it raises so many issues, it's impossible to cover everything. Do you have any questions about what we've read today, or just in general? Or do we cover the foreign issue enough, Bill?
I was going to say, you should go on this website, this Fairfax Cryobank website, which is the company that's in this building.
What's it called?
Fairfax Cryobank? Ridiculous. They have a wait list because they're so popular.
For
like their sperm, I guess. And then if you like click on their... Like,
to donate their sperm, there's a wait?
No, to get their sperm.
Get their sperm, okay.
And you can like, right, personal profiles, $20. Childhood photos, $5. Silhouette, $21. Full audio interview, $30.
Well, there was a sperm bank in California that was for Nobel Prize winners.
Really?
Oh my. Wait, what?
They had people.
Or, you know, they market, you know, we have the
premium. Oh, nice enough Nobel Prize winners donated sperm.
Well, they probably had, like, there's probably a couple crazy ones who are like, oh, yeah, I'm that good, I'll do it.
No, seriously. I mean, I don't think it exists anymore, but. Yeah, I was playing around on the computer just before this class, just going online and looking at, trying to find donor registries, you know, people who are willing to be donors. Usually it gives just, I was trying to find some of these ads, but I to locate any that were for the really expensive, you know, for the real high payments. I located a lot of registries that have donors available, and you can pay to look at the registry. And they all had pictures, but a lot of clinics don't necessarily, the picture isn't necessarily available. And then in some of these situations, you actually meet the donor, and some you don't. It depends on your preferences, I guess. Why would you choose to meet or not to meet the donor? What would you do and why? Or even look at a picture.
The image came to my mind of like Match.com. it's like you want to know that it's real, that the picture looks like the person and they act like what they say they're going to act like. And
why would somebody not want to have a picture of their donor?
Because then that's somebody else. Like, I mean, if you want that child to be your child, then you have to think about that other person who's out there, who's really the...
Yeah, you'll probably never forget that picture.
Yeah,
never
forget that image. And always be scrutinizing, you know, the kid.
Or meeting the surrogates. Well, usually you do meet the surrogates. And in many cases now you meet the birth parents if it's adoption. But gamete donation is not necessarily, in fact, most of the time you probably don't meet the donor. If it's done through a clinic, many clinics have their own lists and it's not something that happens. Are you looking up some donor registries?
Yeah, it's just funny.
What do you see?
They have Fairfax Cry.
Yeah.
So this is for sperm?
Yeah. No, they have everything.
Oh, they have...
Yeah, they have...
Oh, well, this is for sperm.
Oh, it's really nice. It's called a cryobank. I mean, they have frozen...
It's just like skin tone, eyes, hair, degree, occupation, interests, religion, favorite pet, personal goals, talents, hobbies. And then there's price, but for vials, but I don't know what these are. What quantity this is for? Lifetime photos.
It's just,
and you can pay for other things too.
See, it's all like
a childhood photo costs $5.
He was saying
they just do storage, though, like embryo storage. Mm-hmm. They don't do anything.
But, right.
So, I also wonder a little bit about, you know, because it sounds like a lot of these donor banks have like very, very stringent criteria on like what you need to have and like the background, your own family history that you need in order to donate. So then what about kids that have been adopted themselves or were, you know, done through a process like this? Are they like, is that population allowed to donate sperm and eggs? Because you don't necessarily have that background information. I mean, like, would you be able to do it at one of these banks if you like can't fill out the full application because you don't know your grandfather's like height and weight? I think that's what one of the articles was talking about.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think probably the sperm banks don't have the same kind of requirements as the egg donation.
Probably not.
I think in a lot of the reproductive clinics, you know, for egg donation, they require you to give health background for both parents, and if you don't have that, you know, they have people who do have that background, so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just envisioning like someone who, you know, who is basically like only allowed to, you know, basically was produced by that and wants to like give back to the community. Like, this is like the only situation that I can really envision, like someone being like truly altruistic about it and being like, really want to donate. Oh, wait, I can't because I don't know anything. Like a very sort of circular process, but
that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
And then you also are taking these people at their word because there's no...
Yeah,
background investigation to determine whether their answers are correct on these surveys.
Are you really
even about their own health? You know, I mean, their parents, the clinic workers are seeing them, and I'm assuming if they said they were 6'3 and they were actually 5'2, they might say, wait a minute, maybe cool, not. Huh? But, you know, they have no way of double checking the health background.
No.
You know, which is something that people, I think, deem pretty important. So,
5'10 is the shortest.
I just the money thing. It's still bothering me. Like, why is it that the people with money can do all sorts of things?
Because that's what the world works.
I know. I'm sorry. That was like way oversimplified. But
Is it fair?
So what about the couple that doesn't have, you know, they didn't have $70,000, it sounds like, either, but, you know, what about the couple that don't?
Well, in some states, their insurance will be required to cover two cycles of IVF.
Yeah, that's what Mason was saying.
Yeah, or good.
Where they cover unlimited cycles.
But if you don't live there, you're not a citizen.
It's really hard to be an Israeli
citizen.
Like, they view reproductive rights different, you know.
Face match.
They want the Jewish people to reproduce, and the birth rates there are pretty low. So, they cover more.
I prefer to move to Israel, actually.
Okay. Any other questions or comments or
one married an Israeli, another joined the army. Like he was there studying, and he actually joined the army so that he could get like free. He wanted to go to grad school there, and was like, well, if I join the army and become a full citizen, it's all paid for.
Wow. So next week we have a guest speaker, a woman who did a Fulbright in the Arab Emirates, who's going to talk about her research on artificial reproductive technology there. The following week is technically our last class. As I said last week, I cannot come that week. So we're going to have a makeup the week after, if you can make it. That's just one day after the semester ends.
That's the 27th?
Yes, the 27th. If you can't, obviously, I understand completely. If you can, that would be great. And then your final papers are due on May 8th. And that deadline is arbitrary. Just let me know whether that's good for you or not. If you plan on turning it in later, let me know. Those of you who are graduating, we need to figure out when it needs to be in. Okay? Yeah. Thanks. No, the next class is here in this room.
Okay.
Next week.
Wait, so they're
so it was a good workshop?
Yes.
If it starts
every time,
sperm.
Oh, it was introduction. Everybody introduced themselves.